Good morning, family. My name is Kathy, and I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. Woo! Obviously, it's an emotional morning for me, so I'll get through it. I usually do. I ask God to help me and to give me the strength to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm coming to you today via New Jersey. And there you go. I've got some of my friends, home group members, assembly members, and friends who used to live in New Jersey and moved to the Keys. And they love to post pictures all the time of where they live while we're having snowstorms and shoveling. But that's okay. I'm trying to accept that. We'll see how that goes. When I had received the email with the topic, I took a big sigh because I asked myself, what am I not accepting right now? And it gave me an opportunity to work on some of those things and to identify them, because sometimes, you know, I might get all caught up in things that are going on and I might forget that really what I need to do is to work on my acceptance. And before I forget, I hope to see you all in 2018 when we have our international in Baltimore. Usually for me, when I am not accepting something, I'm just totally repeating the same thing over and over and over again. You know, we talk about the family disease and the obsession and just, you know, reliving the same moments over and over and over again and trying to make things different, not on the outside, but for me, I do that on the inside. And if I'm just spinning around and reliving all of the things that I'm not accepting, what that does is it causes me more pain, discomfort, and then I end up getting, you know, more and more unreasonable. It says, you know, we become unreasonable and knowing, you know, unreasonable without knowing it. And then I realize that, you know, there's something that is, you know, greater than I am, and that's God. You know, since we've been here, you know, there's always little things that happened. I've learned to accept that in Atlanta, my hair is going to do whatever it's going to do. I've been fighting that for 2 days, and I don't have enough product to figure out what the right concoction is to let that go, you know, to work it out to where how I want it. So I'm going to accept it, and it's going to be whatever it's going to be. Getting caught in the rain, the wind, whatever, I don't care at this point, you know. But it took a couple of days, you know. That's the story of my life, you know, is that it takes me a little bit of time before I realize, hey, wait a minute, this is insane. What am I trying to do? I can't bring my in-styler with me and plug it in all day. So, you know, but it's another thing, you know. And in our hotel, we've had a few struggles. In the middle of the night, a pipe dripping into the toilet from the ceiling, you know, and things like that. So they moved us yesterday, and there's a few little things, you know, with the air conditioning that are not exactly the way that we would like them. But leaving it on overnight, you know, at this point, we're here, it's started, we're not dying, we're going to let that go, and we're going to accept it. So this morning, my husband says, hey, geez, maybe God, you know, created all this room stuff to help us learn to accept stuff. And I said, well, God doesn't start problems. And he goes, right, he causes situations. And I just looked at him and said, yeah, and you can move along now, you know, because it took a while for us to get, I'll speak for myself, I don't know what his story is, but I try not to do that these days. But you know, it's really, how important is it? You know, we have a room, we have a bed, you know, we can, you know, we're not getting in there until late anyway, so who cares, you know? And we will, again, that was another two-day, you know, process. So far, what's happening recently has only been going on for 2 days, but that's not my story. My story is when I did my first, fourth step, the character defect that came out the most was fear. And my fear caused me much pain and grief, and I wouldn't accept anything. Before Al-Anon, the only thing that I accepted is if you did what I told you to do. That was the only thing that I would accept, and I told a lot of people a lot of things to do. but I learned when I came in here that there are different things that I need to do to process through that. The thing that when I first got the meeting topic and figured out what is the one thing that I'm not accepting, and of course it's something with a family member who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever, it doesn't matter. He's still an alcoholic whether he is drinking or not, and he's not doing something that I want him to do, and I wasn't accepting that. And then when I saw the topic and I started doing the readings and trying to figure out what do I do to accept things, I've come to a point where I have had to accept what it is that he is or is not doing. You know, I've had a long run with this particular person where I told him how to live, basically. And I know now that I still can't do that. It doesn't matter how long I have, he has, or whatever that is. Time does not always equal, you know, this big ball of recovery. I can slip back and turn into that person that wants to tell everybody what to do or resent you and not tell you. That's almost more harmful because I'm only harming myself. At least this way, if I get it out, then I can make an amends when I figure out what it is that I'm doing. So, you know, the family disease of alcoholism is a liar and a thief. It takes my serenity. It takes my peace. And, you know, it takes a lot of stuff. It steals. It steals the ability to live my life. But I never really did live my life. I always lived somebody else's life. And that started when I was in kindergarten, without any effects of alcoholism in my family. It's just something that I get naturally, and that's just, you know, big kudos for me. You know, it's something that I've had to deal with for a long time, but I never recognized that it was a problem and the fight that I was doing. And, you know, with some of the things that I've been reading, I did jot down some of them, and I just want to do quick little excerpts of what really helped me, because when I'm not accepting something, I need to talk to other people. I need to call my sponsor. I need to tell her, this is what I'm not accepting. And then she usually tells me, oh, you mean the world isn't revolving around you? And we both laugh, because that's pretty much what it is. The world is not revolving around me, and you know, someone is not doing what I believe is the right thing to do, but when did I ever do what the right thing is? So who's judging it based on my thoughts and feelings? And in one of the readers, and I was looking at The Courage to Change and One Day at a Time, and what it says is acceptance and surrender are two attitudes that open all the doors to Al-Anon way of life. And they are the most difficult. And that's really, you know, key for me, is that if I'm not surrendering, you know, I don't have to like it. I heard a long time ago, and that gave me a lot of peace, that said, you know, when you're, you know, trying to accept something, that I don't have to like it, because I really don't like very much. So when I'm dealing with other people's, you know, actions or reactions or what they're supposed to do, you know, I don't like what they're doing. And it took me a long time to realize I don't have to keep fighting it. And just because I'm accepting it does not mean that I condone it or that I bless it or that I like it. You know, a sponsee of mine had told me, she goes, I went to a meeting the other day and I heard this excellent thing. There's only two types of business, my business and none of my business. And I was like, dang, now why do I know that? Because, you know, I hear my husband say all the time, you know, you can't unring a bell. Now that I know that, I can ask myself, is this my business or is this none of my business? And if it's none of my business, then I need to figure out what it is that I need to do to get over that, to let that go. When I was in early on, people said, well, you've got to let that go. So I was like, okay, sounds pretty cool. So whenever something would happen, I would go, well, I have to let that go. Well, I have to let that go. And all of a sudden, I was still having the crying jags, still having the lashing out to people for no reason, for the smallest of things. And what I found out was using the words, I have to let that go, or I have to accept that, doesn't do a darn thing for me. There's work. There's work that has to be done for that acceptance and that peace to happen. And then I found out, you know, that, of course, at that time I wasn't working with a sponsor. I probably would have gotten that information a lot earlier had I been. But, you know, that's pretty much how it happened for me, because, you know, I know for myself, and I know a lot of people that I've heard share, you know, the family disease of alcoholism is that I don't need anybody's help because I do it all. And if I'm doing it all, I certainly don't need you to help me, because you're going to interfere in my plan and my actions and what I'm going to do. So once I heard, too, is that, you know, working with a sponsor over things that are happening, that it cuts the problem in half. Once I get it out there, it's automatically lightened because I've given half of that to someone else, and they don't have to carry it. They can let that go, but they can give me their insight. And my sponsor's great. Whenever there's an issue and I'm fighting something, her first thing is read the pamphlet, Understanding Ourselves in Alcoholism. Then she says, read the prayer in As We Understood on page 214, which is excellent, by the way. It has all of the steps encompassed in it, and I have a copy of it where at my desk underneath my monitor at work, and I will read it very often when I'm struggling with something, you know, and other, you know, tidbits of what she has found that's helpful. When I had gotten more involved in Al-Anon and I started doing service, if you want to work on acceptance, do service work. It's not bad, it's just different, because now instead of focusing on, you know, my alcoholic relatives, friends, or whatever, now I'm focusing on Al-Anon people, and those are lovely arguments. I'm sorry you feel that way. You may be right. All of the code words that we've learned, we use on each other, and sometimes it's really annoying, but... You know, between doing that and focusing on the concepts and what's my business and what's your business, and you're accountable for your stuff and I'm accountable for my stuff, and then we can communicate and figure out together what is the real plan. And service has really helped me. It's caused me a lot of pain, but the only reason I had that pain was because I wasn't accepting somebody else for what they were doing or how they were doing it or what they weren't doing. And so on and so forth. It doesn't really matter what the issues are or what they were doing. The end result was that it was me. It was me trying to figure out what they should do, what they shouldn't do. And again, I just brought my disease into service. So with the help of those people in service, I have learned, you know, tons of information and really can, for the most part, let go of a lot. And if I can't, I have to talk to people about that. I have to bring things up in a meeting when we're having a business meeting in our group, when we're having, you know, at our AWSC or at the assembly, you know, preferably the AWSC, so that I can bring up, this is the issue, this is what I'd like to have added to the agenda, what does everybody think? And I heard a long time ago from a speaker that, you know, when it comes to the business meetings and the group conscience, that even if it isn't something that I agree with, I need to accept it because it is the group's conscience. And when I walk outside that exit, that I'm carrying the group's conscience with me. I'm not campaigning on the side. I'm not talking about how things should change or what should be done or, you know, I really didn't vote on that anyway, because that's my disease. That's what I did before I came to Al-Anon. And if I want things to be better in my life, I need to change. You know, you see all the things that, you know, in the stores and things, and it says if nothing changes, nothing changes. If Kathy doesn't change, Kathy doesn't change. So that's really what it boils down to. I need to look at myself and figure out what's causing this pain and this angst. The courage for today reading had, I need to identify and change self-destructive behavior. And the reading was on procrastination, which is a whole other topic, but that I won't talk about. I'm going to put that off. But the, you know, what I got out of that sentence was my self-destructive behavior. That's me fighting. When I'm fighting, I'm self-destructing myself from the inside, you know, and that's what this whole thing is about. That's what the, you know, the fellowship and the program of Al-Anon Family Groups is to help me get along with me. And if I'm getting along with me, I'll get along with you. But I need to get along with me. You loved me before I loved me. And the ODAT said, the difference between stumbling blocks and stepping stones is how I use them. You know, I can continue to stumble and fight, or I can accept it and then work on that acceptance. You know, we talk about the three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. In the past, I was aware of a problem and I jumped right to the action because something had to be done. All the work for me is in acceptance, that middle A. You know, if I'm not working on that, how can I do an action? Because I'm just reacting, I'm not acting. And that's what really causes, it can cause mayhem in my family and in my work life, which it has most definitely. And now I can sit and I could do my work, I can listen, and then figure, you know what, I don't need to get involved in that. When I was in early on, I was complaining to my sponsor. I had a copier that was outside of my cube that broke down all the time, and I was complaining about how I had to fix this copier over and over and over again. And she stopped me and she said, did those people ask you for your help? And I looked at her and I said, well, no, because basically I would hear the jam and I would get up and I would run out there and I'd like push the person out of the way because I can fix it. I know how to do this. And what I didn't realize was that I was probably pushing them further away. You know, and she said, well, is that something, is that in your job description? And I said, no, but it's right near me. If you fell in my radius, I had to either help or do something, you know, to you or for you. Most of the time it was to you. But, you know, what she told me to do is the next time to not get up. And I looked at her and I'm like, are you kidding me? And I was sitting at work and all of a sudden I hear somebody banging on the copier. And I started to get up and I sat there and I literally had to sit on my hands and listen to this whole thing unfold just a few feet from me. And guess what? They didn't come to me. They didn't ask me to help them. And they fix it themselves. You know, we talk about everything that we do, if we're doing something for someone else that they're able to do, I'm stealing their dignity. I'm making them less than because I'm doing it for them. So then it became really easy. After a while, I was like, who cares about the copier? You know, that kind of came second nature to me, but it takes time. Anytime I try to make any type of a major change in my personality or my mindset, it takes time and it's not perfect. You know, there's going to be times where I'm still going to interfere. You know, I am now a mother-in-law and a grandmother, and I've needed to learn my place in that situation. I need to know when, you know, when I am involved and when I'm not. Is it my business or theirs? You know? And that has been very helpful to me. And I tell people my tongue has gotten very short because I keep biting it, you know. And a lot of times, you know, I haven't done, as far as I can tell, I haven't done any damage to any of those relationships because we have really good between my son, myself, and my daughter-in-law, and myself, and my husband. It's great, you know, and as long as I keep myself in check and don't start interfering and meddling, I'm going to do better. I want to be invited back. I want to be included, you know. There's a lot of relationships that I see, and it might not even be because of what someone else had said or done. It might be the other person and just not letting me in, you know. And for that, I need to understand that I can't keep going to someone who doesn't want me in their life. Had a situation with my sister, another topic, but she didn't talk to me from 2003 to 2013. And when she first, you know, told me that, you know, that was it, I really didn't have much problems accepting it because I knew that it was coming. And I didn't know that it was coming from that I'm projecting the future thing. It was a fact. It was going to happen. And I didn't, you know, let that really bother me. It was a shame and it was sad. And if I hadn't been in Al-Anon, I would be in the same place as my sister. And I didn't want that. So I was happy where I was with the support and the help that I needed. And she called out of the blue in 2003, and now we talk maybe three times a year, you know, and I talked, both of our birthdays are in March, and when she was done talking to me, she said, okay, well, I'll call you sometime later in the year. And I said, okay, you know, and I can accept that because that's pretty much what she can do. But during our blackout period where she wasn't talking to me, there were a couple of family members that were sick and one was dying. And I knew that. And I knew that she had stayed in touch with this person via mail. And I called to talk to her, to let her know, to give her this information, regardless of the fact that she wasn't speaking to me. You know, people kept telling me, well, maybe you should try, maybe you should try. And I kept saying, well, no, the time will be right when I should try. And this was the time. So when I called, I talked to my brother-in-law for 5-10 minutes, and he said, well, let me go get her. And I said, okay. And he came back, and he goes, I'm sorry, she won't get on the phone. And I said, well, that's okay, because it really was. Because, see, I had really accepted that. I said, but I wanted to let her know that this individual is sick and she's dying, and I don't think she has much time. I know that she stays in touch with her, and I wanted her to have that information. And she wrote a letter to her that she never got because she had passed away before that. But my side of the street was clean. I called her. I gave her information however it needed to be. She may not have picked up the phone and wanted to talk to me about it. But then as people had started to pass away, I started taking their obituaries and mailing them to her because I figured she needs to have, you know, this is, you know, they talk to us about, you know, you write the letter, you do the thing, you don't expect anything from that. And from the obituary effort, I got a Christmas card thanking me for the obituaries. So, but that was her process of how she was going to start, you know, because she couldn't ignore that. But I didn't do that thinking she's going to do this in return. I had no expectations, nothing from that. And now here we are today. And one of the first times I talked to her was when I was on my way to the Tuesday meeting that I go to. And I shared, never say never. You know, because when it first happened, I said, well, that's it. I'm never going to talk to her again. And my sponsor said, never say never. And I've heard in the rooms and hear speakers speak, and they always say, never say never. And I can say never now. But we're, you know, we're trying to keep each other, you know, whatever. The relationship is, it is. In the ODAT, when it's talking about the stumbling blocks and stepping stones, it says that I need to change my view of myself and the world that I'm creating around me. And that's really what this whole thing is about, is trying to figure out who I am. What makes me tick? Why did I do what I did? Because I'm sure I had a good reason, but did I have to handle it the way that I handled it? You know, I'm sure, you know, we all have, you know, our reasons, and I know that I do. I saw a shirt yesterday that said, God, dear God, I can explain. And, you know, it made me laugh because it's like, sure, I've got stories for everything, you know, and the reasons behind why I did what I did and what happened. But I know today that without acceptance, I'm really not going to be peaceful and serene. And I like the serenity that I have when I have it. And when I don't have that quiet and peaceful noise, that's what I'm trying to avoid is the noise. When I don't have that quiet and peaceful mind, what I have is just this static and this noise and the wheels going. And, you know, another friend likes to talk about, you know, the committee. And the committee is telling me things that are not helpful to me. And that eats away at my serenity. And if they're alive in my head, I'm not accepting anything. So I hope you have an enjoyable international. I hope the meetings that you go to are helpful. I hope that you find peace and serenity. And I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Kathy. That was wonderful. And next we have Nancy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nancy, a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Nancy.
And thank you, Kathy. You said so much that I could relate to, and I appreciate that. One of the things I know for sure is that if God brings me to it, God will bring me through it. And so I know that I've got his blessing today. I made a promise to myself. Actually, it was a challenge that I would not script what I was going to say. So it will be what it will be. And I'm really interested to find out what that is. I want to tell you a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what it's like today for me. And I do know for sure, without a doubt, because of Al-Anon, that acceptance is the key to my serenity. So I was born, I should tell you, I am from Vancouver, Canada. And did anybody come up to the International Convention? Hey, welcome. I'm so glad. Oh, thank you for coming. We just had such a great time. I was the chairperson for the local committee, so it was great fun for me. So I was born in a family of five siblings. I cannot remember drinking in my home as such, except if the odd guest dropped through. So that wasn't a problem for me. But I do know now that there were other isms within my family. I was one of five siblings. I was the middle child. And I think that placement is really important for me, because if I was the baby of the older two, I allowed other people to make decisions for me, to be responsible for me. I just went along with what was going on. And I kind of loved that role of being taken care of. On the other hand, if I was with my younger siblings, I was the one responsible. I was the one that took care of them, and I comforted them when things were wrong. And if anything bad happened, it would have been my fault. And those things I know now about myself because of this program of Al-Anon. And I took those things and kept them in my heart. There were things that went on in our home that I thought I grew up in a normal home. But honestly, when I think back of what it was, there were some things that happened in our home that were maybe pretty unusual. If something happened in our home, we were sent to our room, and we were told to put a smile on and not come out until we could. And that's pretty hard when you've got five siblings, because there's disagreements that go on. But that's how we settled it, just go to your room. I had a very structured and... I'll just leave it a structured upbringing. And at our dinner table, we all ate together every night, 6 o'clock. And when we ate together, there was always a topic of discussion. And it was never about me, and it was never about any of our other siblings. And to this day, I can never remember anyone ever asking me how my day was. So what I learned to do was keep it all inside and never talk about me. And that keeping a secret was being quiet. I had no words to describe my emotions. As a matter of fact, we never really showed emotions in our home that I can really remember of. And those two things, all those things, became part of who I am today. And I took all those things and I got out of the house pretty early. I was engaged at 19 and married at 20. And I could hardly wait, actually, to get into my own home and have my own family. And we were going to have a couple of kids and a dog and a house and a white picket fence. And this would be my house with my rules. And it was going to be different than the one that I grew up in, for sure. And it was. Not exactly the way I planned it, but sure enough, we ended up. I married the man of my love. Really, he lived four doors away from me growing up. So I was very familiar with his family, and all our friends were the same. And we went to the same church, same school, same bus stop. And it was wonderful. It was like we were magnets to each other. One of the things my husband told me before we got married was that he was having a problem with his parents, and he didn't feel quite the same as his sibling, and it really bothered him. And I said, you know, I kind of, well, I denied that. I mean, it really wasn't important to me, because I knew that in our house he was going to be important. And that's all that counted, because we were going to have this wonderful dream life. And within a couple of years, we had terrific fun when we were first married. I was a good entertainer. We had lots of people over. We had no money. Life was great, though. And we just continued on our happy old way. And we had children after 5 years, a little boy and girl. And I'm not quite sure what happened in the change, but I think it had a lot to do with the partying we were doing. And I joined in on those parties. I was fully beside my husband. We had such a great time. But I began to notice some things that were a little different when we were entertaining, if there was any liquor involved, for sure. My husband became the life of the party, and everybody loved him. And when they went home, his party continued and mine didn't. And I couldn't quite understand that or put my finger on it. But when our child, our first child, was young, this is what it was like. We went to a Christmas party. It was called a brandy breakfast. Sounded great to us. And we had a babysitter for our child. And we just had a heck of a good time at this party. When we returned home, my husband decided that our house needed to be washed. And this is the outside of the house, and in Vancouver, that was around, you know, mid-November. And it was a white house, and it was dirty, and he was going to wash it. And I thought, that's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard of. And not only that, the neighbors will think you're crazy. So I decided to go out for a walk with my little girl, and he continued to wash the house. And then he came after me down the street, around the corner, yelling and screaming, how could I be so stupid as to leave him washing the house? And we had a bit of a disagreement. That disappeared. That was just that one-time thing. But it was sort of the very first thing I noticed. His behavior was different when we had been at that party. One of the things that happened was we started really associating with different people than we had before. And I now know that if you are drinking, you quite often attract others that drink. And that's what happened. But my husband loved to be the life of the party, come on over, and we always seemed to have a lot of alcohol to provide for others. No money, but a lot of alcohol. And so, but we continued on our merry way, and I kept making and baking and cooking for everybody. And I thought, this is getting hard for me, because it's like all the time. Everyone's always in our house, and it became really the party house. And I know that now. But I thought, oh, he's happy. It's okay, because he's happy. I want to tell you a couple of things what happened, because his drinking escalated, and it escalated like we know it can, and it became out of control. Our children grew up. Our son was really sports-minded, and my husband was very involved with his hockey, and we'd always go to every game and watch. And sure enough, we went to this one game. My husband was asleep on the Chesterfield, and my son, I guess he would have been about 12, he came up to me and he says, Mom, it's time to head out to the arena. Are you ready? And I said, sure I am. Let's go. And just let me get your dad. And he said, don't wake him up, Mom. Please don't wake him up. And I stopped for that 1 second. I knew he was asleep, but he was passed out on the couch. And I said, okay, so away we go. We go up to the arena. We don't talk about it at all. And we go, and our son's on the ice, and he's having a great game. And in walks him. And it was terrible. There he was. The drinking had progressed. He was not shaven, not clean. His body reeked of alcohol. His clothes were not the same. He didn't seem to care about what he was wearing. And we were in this private club where that appearance was unusual. And so he started yelling at the ref. And he started screaming. It was really embarrassing. My reaction was to look at our son, whose head went down, and he skated off the ice to the bench. I, on the other hand, just turned around and pretended that wasn't him. That wasn't my husband. That was somebody else. And I never said a word to anybody. And he was kicked out of the club that day and told never to come back again. That whole thing, my heart went out to my son. But what was my reaction? After the game, I gave my son a hug. I said, "You had a great game." And we got in the car and went home. I never said another word. Now, amongst that whole thing, what I forgot, my husband drove there and he drove back. And he was inebriated big time. And I never gave that another thought. I never phoned anybody and said, "Get that man off the road. He could have killed somebody else's boy." And we were lucky that day. Nothing happened. So the drinking, you know, I just kind of was in this la-la land, ignoring everything, taking care of my kid. So another incident, alcoholism, I know is today. My husband was drinking a lot. Every night after work, he would stop at the liquor store for another bottle of vodka. Quite often, it would be finished by the time he got home. And my kids told me that Dad was drinking in the basement. Don't be ridiculous. Nobody in their right mind drinks in the basement. And I left it at that. It never occurred to me that he wasn't in his right mind. And I was completely ignorant. And then my son kept saying, "You know, Mom, Dad's awake really early in the morning, and I can hear the cap of the bottle opening." I said, "You know, Craig, I think you're dreaming. I'm sure. Nobody drinks first thing in the morning." And, I was a crazy person. This is how crazy I was. My husband had a habit of drinking in the basement, so what do with your empty bottles? Or full ones, for that matter. You don't want your wife upstairs to know. You hide them. One day I was downstairs in the basement. I found an empty bottle of vodka. I thought, "What the heck? What's this doing down here?" Duh. "What's this doing down here? Why would anyone hide an empty bottle?" Anyways, I brought it upstairs. Something stayed with me a few days later. "I wonder if there's any more." So I go down because I can't leave that alone. That's my obsession now. So I go downstairs and I mean, without a word of a lie, they were everywhere. Hunty bag, golf bag, luggage, Christmas decorations. There were empty bottles all over the basement. And I thought, "Whoa, I better get rid of those." I don't know why I thought that was really important, but I brought them upstairs. Now, that alone is nuts. But I brought them up. Those were the days in Vancouver where we started recycling. And in the recycling rules where you had to have the labels off, I filled our set tub with hot soapy water, and I scraped the labels off every single vodka bottle that I could get my hands on. But they were all empty. That didn't matter. And then I thought, now what am I going to do? Because I've got like a lot of, you know, I was filling my recycling boxes, and I'm thinking, they have to go out to the corner. But if I put them all out there, somebody in the neighborhood will know that there's been a lot of vodka drinking in this house. And, you know, it's probably her, but it, you know, wouldn't be him. He's such a nice guy. And he is. But so I took those containers, they're like boxes, down to the recycling plant. And when I got down there, I thought, you know what? Maybe the people doing the recycling, you know, the people that put things in different bins will catch on that they're all vodka bottles from that lady. So I took them one at a time, and I quietly, I didn't drop them. I didn't want them to break because that would bring somebody some notice. And I didn't want that to happen. So I just quietly pushed them down and eventually got rid of those. I think that's a sign of someone who's got a problem. And it wasn't necessarily him. It was me. And I think the odd thing about that was that near the end of me doing those vodka bottles, I started enlisting my daughter to help me find them. And she was helping me go through. So what? She was helping me go through the basement. So what was I doing to my kids? I was ignoring my son, and I was enlisting my daughter because I thought we could then prove that there was something going on in our house. And that was really my focus, my obsession, and I feel really badly about that today. So our life continued to get worse, if you can imagine. It did get worse. My husband had his own business. I don't know how he managed that. He had 64 staff, and he still went there to work, came home, and drank his bottle of vodka every day. And to this day, none of our friends, our close friends, were aware that there was a problem. And I think it all goes back to the way I was acting, because I was really good at going into my room and coming out with a smile on my face. I'd carried that all my life, all that being false. And one day when my daughter was, believed she was 17, she said to me one night after a bit of a disagreement, "You know, Mom, if you don't do something about Dad, I'm moving out." And I said to her, "Oh, well, don't be ridiculous. You can't move out. You're only 17 and you're not even of legal age yet. How would you live?" And she just looked at me like that was my reaction. Not, "Why do you feel you need to go out?" but just that you can't move out. And she said, "I don't care. I'll find a way to make a living." And our son stood up beside her. He was 14. And he said, "Mom, if she goes, I go, because I'm not staying here by myself. You're nuts." And at that very moment, I got this calmness about me, because I sort of quietly said, "Help, help." Didn't know what I was saying help to, but help. I didn't know what to do. And I looked at my spouse, and I said to him, "I love you. Pack your bags and get the hell out of the house. Get out. Your drinking's not coming between me and my children. Leave, and leave now." And he did. He left. An hour later, he was back because he didn't know where to go. I forgot to tell him, you know, and that's what he was waiting for. "You can go to, you know, down the road." And I just hadn't done that. So I said, "Okay, you can come. You can spend the night, but tomorrow, that's it." And, you know, waffle, and the kids looking at me like, "That was a great promise, Mom." So we did go and get help. And from that moment to today, my husband's never had another drink. He got that same type of epiphany, exactly the same moment that I did. And I think that's the first miracle that we ever experienced here in our home. My husband decided to go to AA, and that was terrific. I had a lot of trouble letting him go to AA. I wanted him to go to AA, but I wanted to know exactly what was going on because I still didn't trust this man that had done all this bottle stuff. And sure enough, I offered to drive him. I offered to go in with him if he was feeling a little shaky about it. I offered to sit in the parking lot. I offered to get him the big book. I got him a sponsor. I feel really bad about that. I think I had some control issues. And in the meantime, this lovely person who became his sponsor suggested that there was a program for me called Al-Anon, and that I might really like it. It could be a spot for me. And you know what? I did listen because I knew that someone over there in Al-Anon, that group, was going to tell me what to do, exactly what to do with him. And I could follow those instructions. I was good at doing directions. I was good at giving them, and I was good at taking them. So just tell me what to do. All I heard that first meeting, I walked in and saw a girl I'd gone to high school with, and I died. I thought, oh, shoot, she'll know. And of course she knew. Of course she knew, and she welcomed me with open arms. She became my sponsor, which was wonderful. But I heard two things that very first meeting, and it's so important to me today. And it was, keep the focus on yourself. Keep coming back. And that's all I remember. I don't remember another word. But I came back, and what happened to me the second meeting was, I started to cry. I cried. Every time it came to my turn to share, I cried. I could hardly say my name. And I'm not kidding when I say that. I cried for 6 months. And I thought, I am so embarrassed. I go in, you know, calm. I'm going to do this. Sit down. And I cry. And I thought, holy smokes. And one day I saw on the floor of Form magazine, and it said Healing Tears on the outside cover. And I thought, healing tears? You mean tears heal? No wonder I cried for 6 months. I'd never cried all my life. I wasn't allowed to. Al-Anon gave me permission. It gave me permission to have that emotion. It gave me permission to have all my emotions. I had a heck of a time even naming my emotions. Crying was the physical one that I could understand. Anyways, my life continued, and I have kept those two things in mind every day. Focus on self. Keep coming back. And I'm still doing those two things. But my life is different today because of Al-Anon. And one of the things, and Kathy mentioned that as well, as doing some service work. Once I had accepted that it was okay to be me, and you allowed me to do that, you gave me that privilege. It's okay to be you. We love you no matter who you are. Come and be you. Once I had accepted that, I knew that I could really help Al-Anon by being in service. Because I still had that little thing, you know, and I was good at that. So anyways, I've done a lot of service in Al-Anon, and I've learned a lot of things. I've learned that it's not about me. It's about God. It's about God helping me be of service to the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. And that has been so important to me. I did have the privilege of working on the International Convention. And I learned, you know, when you step into a job, you don't know. You think you're doing it to help others. It was really good for me because I learned one more time. It didn't matter what I wanted to do. It was up to God. And I was given instructions by others that went before me. They knew better than I did. So I have also learned God, myself, and others. And Al-Anon has helped me, once I've accepted that, I'm not in that first place. My obsession with people, places, and things are my defects of character. No matter what I want, I have no right, I have no right to tell you what to do. But that is still something that I have to work with every single day. I know today, because of Al-Anon, that I lead a godly path. Good forward direction here. And it's because I've been able to develop a spiritual path. And that spiritual path has helped me accept myself and move forward in a better way than I ever knew how. I'm just going to end with this because I've read this quote. I read this quote, but, you know, I can't honestly remember where I read it from. But it said, when the power of love overcomes the love of power, our world will be at peace. And I'm just going to add to that, let it begin with me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Yes. All right. And our last speaker is Donna.
Good morning. My name is Donna, and I'm a very grateful Al-Anon. I come from Seguin, Texas, and I bring you welcome. I have a home group. It's the Serenity Al-Anon Family Group, and it meets on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. Anyone who's in Seguin, Texas, now you need to look that up. I want you to Google it. If you were in San Antonio, you were near me. It was so much fun in San Antonio. Thank you all for who were there. But you're more than welcome to please come. We have a great group. I began in that group, and I'm still in that group. Today, I'm very grateful. I have with me my husband and our little posse that run together, and it's our chosen family. Thank you, guys. You know, they remind me on a daily basis. We were riding the train this morning. Well, let me start first by telling you that it was interesting in the little house that we're in. I get up and I get dressed, put my makeup on, do all that, then I eat. That should tell you about taking care of myself. That I have to look good for you first, then I'll take care of me. It doesn't matter how long I'm in the program. My character defects just get a little bit more sophisticated. When I first came in the program, my serenity date, I couldn't tell you the day that I came in. I could tell you about when I came in. I was in such a brownout. I have times in my life that I have no remembrance of what happened because what I was doing is I was planning a plan and planning your outcome. I have no concept. And so my sponsor said, I'm going to give you April Fool's Day because you're a fool. And so today, that is my serenity, my date. Is April Fool's Day, and it makes me laugh every time. But I will tell you that it's a wonderful laugh today. I have a really good friend. You know how things are passed down in the program from sponsor to sponsee and to other people in the program that always talks about leaning in. And for me, that's about acceptance. When I go through something and I just can't get it, if I physically take the motion to lean in, it helps me stop for just a moment. My father's 87 years old. He's a man who is very hard-headed, and I received none of that from him. And in fact, I honestly have to tell you, I'm probably more like him than I am my mother, and it took me a long time to be okay with that. And in all honesty, I'm still not really okay with that. But my father is very, very hard-headed, and he is one of my biggest lessons daily on acceptance. He does things in which the manner in which he wants to do them. He's 87 years old, and our goal is for him to live alone. He lives kind of around the corner from us for as long as he can. And it wasn't too many years ago when he bought a little fishing boat, and he was going to go out fishing. And me in my untreated Al-Anon-ness was like, well, he can't go by himself. He needs to have a partner. What if something happens when he's out there? And my husband says to me, if he dies in the river, that is where he wants to be. And I was like, that's it. That's acceptance. That's it for me. That's saying it's all right. And you know, when I first got in the program, he didn't really understand what was going on in my life. He thought I was going to be different. And so for me today, what I have to do is be the same daughter I've always been, a little less bossy, but I'm still pretty bossy. Be the same daughter I am and I have been, so he will see that it's really not about that change that occurred. It's about me on the inside. I don't change my behavior and my actions to him, because being productive to him and doing for him and being able to anticipate his needs equals love. And I always thought that if I did that for other people as well, then I would be loved. And I love them. And today I know, because of the program, that's not really a truth. But he still sees it that way, and so that's what I do for him at the level of which I can do. And he's happy. Now, my father is a very, very good storyteller. So am I. Meaning I lie really well. And I embellish really, really well. But it's always funny, and it's always entertaining, and there's always a grain of truth in there somewhere. And I accept that about myself today. I do that in a conversational way at times, because when I came into the program, those character defects that I had, those traits that I had, were in an overabundance and were harming me. I know today that they allowed me to live a life and to be able to live, and then they got out a little out of control. I accept that today. And I accept that I can utilize them for good, for fun, and for free. But when they begin to get out of control, I need to rein them back in and do those sort of things. We were on the train this morning coming down here, and anybody notice how hot it gets down there? It's really hot. And I'm in the stage of my life where there's something going on that has really taught me about daily acceptance of change that occurs here and all over. And that's called menopause, by the way. And so I was really hot at different levels of hotness. And we were laughing about that. And so the other thing that happened yesterday was we got to the Congress and we got in line to register, and we didn't get to register because it closed. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do for in the morning? Oh my gosh, you know, I'm a rule follower occasionally. I oftentimes make my own rules, but I bend them for a good cause. And so I was like, what are we going to do? Okay, so we received the instruction that it's not such a big deal, that you can come, you just need your badge, which they gave to us, which was mailed to us. And so not a big deal. I thought, okay, well, how am I going to prove that I'm legit in the meeting the next morning? How am I going to do that? I have a pin. I'm going to pin my name tag to me. Now, all of this occurred last night in my head thinking. So they reminded me on the track this morning that I do a lot of thinking, that I think. And my sponsor told me I can think not three times, because that's too many. Pauline would say, that's too many for you, Donna. So I said, well, what if I make it one continuous long think? And she said, no, you can do it once. And she also told me that I could ask people or tell people what to do once, not anymore. Now, I've increased that to three times. I've moderated it. Because I think that's okay. It's not really a truth, but that's what I do sometimes. So, you know, that whole thinking, that whole... But I've learned to lean in and accept that about myself. I've learned to laugh at myself. I was reminded this morning about the whole service world. That was good. When I first got into service, I was like, okay, they don't follow Robert's rules correctly. Okay? They argue about these, thous, and ands and details. Really, just get it done and move on. One-hour meeting. You know, there's been something recently going around that talks about, gee whiz, I wish that meeting would have been an email rather than a meeting. Yes, that was the way it was in service with me. My very first service opportunity, I sat between. That is not how it happened. They sat on each side of me. And I was just like, oh my gosh, wanting to stop this. You've got to do something a little different. They both put their hand on my leg and said, it's going to be all right. Stop. It's going to be all right. And you know, that's the truth. For me, about acceptance is, it's about accepting and knowing. It's a faith issue that it's going to be all right. It's not that big a deal. It's going to be all right. And my sponsor told me that. She said, Donna, accept things, meaning it's not that you condone. It's not necessarily that you forgive. It's not necessarily that you approve. You accept them as they are. And I'm going to tell you that it's going to be all right. Because for so long in my life, I planned the outcome. You know, I came into the program not remembering at all what the first meeting was about. But I can tell you what I wore to that meeting. And I can tell you what I wore to the very first potluck for both programs. Because when I came in, our programs did things together, which was so smart because I had not a clue what was really going on in the other room. And that was my way in which to learn about that. That was such a smart thing to do. And because it is a family disease, to pull those together, because we don't do things separate. We do them together. And that was very important to me. And so I can tell you what I wore. I can tell you what I fixed for that potluck. Now, that was in 1994. But I do love food, and I can't tell you. So for me, we laugh about those things, and we laugh. Acceptance today is about taking a deep breath and being okay where I am. And it doesn't come easy. It may take me days. It may take me hours. And it's amazing to me when I say to myself, oh, wow, this is about acceptance. Just take a deep breath, lean in, it's going to be all right. How those feelings dissipate, because I've been spending days working on changing how that is on the inside, changing how I think that outcome is going to be, when really the tools at my disposal are immediate relief if I utilize them. That is phenomenal to me. And it doesn't matter how long, it happens every single time. And I almost want to kick myself to say, now, Donna, why didn't you do this a little earlier? You know, you'd have felt a lot better sooner. And then talk about it, and then do my work. My sponsor used to say to me, and she hasn't said it lately to me because I probably haven't honestly told her what all's going on. She used to say to me, Donna, get off the cross. Somebody else needs the wood. And I'd say, but I'm not done yet. And she would laughingly and lovingly say, get off the cross. Somebody else needs the wood. When I came into the program, I could not understand why my husband at that time had no sense of direction. It annoyed me to no end that he couldn't get from point A to point B. And my sponsor pointed out to me, why did he need to when he had me telling him each turn to take? And you know, that's a truth. And that is a gift that I received from my father, is my sense of direction. And I'm grateful for that. For so long, I didn't understand the good things that I got from my mom and dad until my sponsor had me write that letter and write the list of what the good things that I received from both of them. That was so important. That allowed me to accept them to where they were and love them as they are. And that's important to me. And it's important to me today to my father, because he can irritate the you-know-what out of me. I'll give you an example. This week, actually. Well, I'll give you two. My father lives around the corner, and he has a lifeline button. And it has a GPS in it. So if he were to go down within about 20, 25 seconds, it alerts. Now, is that not amazing that they can tell when you're up versus when you're down? Sometimes I'd have liked to have that to my alcoholic. But anyway, so they called us. And we missed both the calls, but my husband called back, and she said, something happened to him, and so he said, okay, I'll go on over. So he goes over, and my father is on his porch visiting with the firemen, just visiting away. And he goes, what are you doing here? Really? Really? He's just visiting with him, not a big deal to him. So he says, how do you know that I fell? Well, he only has mud on half of it, you know, half of him. And so for me, it's about laughter, and it's about accepting that my father enjoyed that visit with those firemen, no matter that we were mortified that once again you know, they had to come before we got there. Because, you see, it was about me making sure that he was okay and about getting there before something happened. But I know today I can't always do that. The ground was muddy. He just bounced right back up. No big deal. Thank goodness for the rain. You know, little things like that. It's been raining a lot in Central Texas, and everything's growing really well, and we're very grateful for that. I don't do yard work, so I'm very grateful for that. And so the trees in his around his house are growing, and there's about four branches that are rubbing on his roof. And he says to me, we need to get those cut. Well, you see, my father had already backed his truck up there, taken his little pole saw, crawled in the back, and tried to cut them down, but it didn't reach. Now, I didn't know that piece of the story till I got into conversation with him. So, what I said was, how come your truck is backed in? Because, you see, I notice everything. That's what a good untreated Al-Anon does. She notices, or he notices, everything. And then I process it. We have a saying in our little family group that, as Bill sees it, and Lois always remembers. And I do. I file it for when I need it. So I knew the truck was backed in, and I said, why don't you back your truck in, Pop? And he said, oh, I moved it to get those branches. I got in the back of it, but, you know, I still couldn't reach him. I said, well, do you want me to call somebody? He said, yes. Would you please call that little guy who sometimes comes and does my lawn? Well, actually, he never really said, will you call the guy? I have to be honest. He just said, hey, you wonder if that guy would do it. Okay. So in my head, I thought, oh, I need to call the man. So I called him, arranged for him to come out that afternoon. I get over to my father's, and he said, I said, did the gentleman come to cut your limbs? Well, yes. Did they cut them? He said, yes. I said, you're lying to me. They're still right there. I can see them. He goes, well, no, I ran them off. I said, why did you do that? He goes, I don't need him. And so then I began questioning, because, you see, that's what I did. I needed to get all the facts. All my life, I've needed to get all the facts so I can devise a story and a result and a scenario around those facts. So I proceeded to begin questioning him, which, by the way, he hates very much. And he's really hard of hearing, so you're doing it in a nice, loving, yelling manner, which is perfect for me. So he's tired of me questioning him, because he really doesn't want to tell me that he really wants my oldest brother, who is the chosen child in our family. That's not said nicely, sorry. that he really wants him to come and do it for him. And so he slams his fist on the table, his hand on the table, and says, I'm telling you that I just didn't want him here. Usually, oftentimes, I have to be honest, I kind of yell back at him. I don't kind of. I yell back at him. This time I said, well, here's your supper. I'm going to go home now. And he says, well, you just go on home. I am. I'll see you later. I'll see you tomorrow when I bring your supper again. And I left. Because, you see, when you walk in the next day, we never talked about feelings in my house. We never talked about those sort of things or talked them out or said, you know, that really hurt my feelings, Pop, and I'm really sorry that I called somebody when you didn't really ask me to. I didn't say that to him, because the next day it was like a whole new world, and it's not a big deal. He just goes on. Okay, well, you're leaving out of town tomorrow. Have a nice time. And I can get into that and do that in my family unit as well. And I have to be very cognizant and accept that that may be the way our relationship is, but that doesn't have to be the way in which the relationship for the rest of my world has to be. And in fact, it cannot be that way. It cannot be that way in my work world. It cannot be that way in my service world. It cannot be that way in my chosen family world. It's a two-way street of communication, and I need to talk about those things, because for so long I didn't do that. And all I did was stuff, 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 and it would come out as anger. It would come out as bursts of anger. I would get a little bit of relief for a small amount of time, and then it would happen again. And it was usually to those that I loved the most. And today that can happen as well when I don't deal with things, when I don't accept as they are, and do the work that needs to be done on them. And so I'm very grateful for the lessons that on a daily basis my pop teaches me, that dad teaches me. And he makes for great stories at lunchtime in the cafeteria. I mean, great stories. So I say, oh, do you have anything about your dad doing this week? Sure, I got a story that Pop did this week. Because it's It's funny. You know, it's humorous. It is about allowing him and accepting him as he is on the terms that he, where he is. And if I would have treated everyone in my life that way, it would have been a totally different life. But that's not what happened. What happened was that I didn't. You know, I was reminded about the bottles. I had forgotten about that. About how the alcoholic in my life was an alcoholic and an addict, and he had pill bottles all hid around. And so one of the times he went to treatment, because it was several times, he came home and he said, oh, could you do a scour before I get home and pull all of those out? And he told me a few places, but I knew he was lying, so I needed to look more. And so I did. And I did those things. You know, I did those things because I thought they were the right thing to do. I thought I was being helpful. You know, because being helpful was being nice. Today, I don't have to do those things if I don't choose to do those things. I would never do anything nice for him because I was so angry at him. But I would never let him know that. And in public, I would be different than I was at home. Because I was not accepting of what was going on. I could not see what was happening. I chose not to see what was happening in my house. And I chose to stuff it down. And the only thing that was exciting and enjoyable to me, although I don't really think I knew the word joy, was having the outcomes of things occur in which the way I wanted them to occur. The other thing that I liked a whole lot was because when things would happen in that household, I would get a nice present. And I liked presents. And you know, today, I still like presents. My birthday is really stretched out because I like presents. And I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for the people I have in my life. That wasn't the way it was then. I felt like I deserved that. He was doing things to me, thus I deserve something for them. For those things I was being put through, I deserve something. And I got nice presents. But I was never really truly grateful for them. Today, it's a whole different world because of the program. You know, it's about love. I wear them with love. I look at them with love. I look at them with gratefulness. I accept them much more graciously. I am pleasured by them and pleasured by the people in my life. Whereas before, that is not what I did at all. They were something to be gained. I gained something from them. I could obtain something from them. They were tools. People were tools for me to get a feeling that I needed to get. That's not so today. Everybody is their own person and gives us a piece of this world and makes it much more beautiful. I think that in our world, if we were more accepting overall, and if people, my husband on the way here, we had several discussions because we drove from Texas here. Uh-huh. So we had several discussions. We were talking about acceptance, and what he said to me is that our acceptance within the program is so different than the acceptance of the world that's not in the program. And you know, that was such a beautiful feeling that came over me that was, that's right. I'm grateful for that. It's a total different acceptance. It's about faith, and it's about it's going to be all right, and it's about allowing the other people in our world to be the way they want to be and choose to be. You can thank him. He's sitting in front of you right there. He's a very smart man. I'll have to tell you a story when we got married. His mother, I talk a lot. You probably can't tell that, but I talk a lot. And she said to me, you make decisions very fast and you make them very quick. I'm going to tell you that Jerry's father, when he would tell me and he would say, give me another option or give me a decision or say to me, maybe you might want to do it this way, he was always right. Come to listen to him because of that wise woman who said, you know, when they speak, it's really a good thing and it's usually correct. What she was saying is, Donna, shut up and just listen to him. And she was right. But that whole world of acceptance for me and about forgiveness for me is another piece of that work. You know, I do the acceptance and the action, and the action is my working on forgiveness and in love. Because I, too, my only emotion that I knew, and I couldn't even name it, was fear. But it was anger. It was aggravation, honestly. I was always at a level of aggravation that never seemed to go away. And today, when I know I get that same feeling, I know to take a deep breath, to lean in, to say it's going to be all right, and to then do the work on why is that occurring? What is out of balance? What is out of sync? What isn't going right? What am I doing? What is my part? Because when I would call, she would always say, "What's your part?" I don't have a part. None of this is my fault. I'm just telling you what I don't like about it. And she would say, "What's your part?" I would say, "It's not my, I have none. It's done to me." She would say, "What's your part?" And then she would say, "Get off the cross. Somebody else needs the wood." Quit being that martyr. And so today I look at it differently. I look at it as an opportunity. And I honestly tell you, I don't always like it. You know, opportunities are not always fun. They don't always feel good. But I know when there's a period of darkness, uneasiness, that there's going to be this huge spurt of growth, that there's going to be this catalyst to the other side if I'm willing to do the acceptance, the awareness, the acceptance, and the action. When that occurs, my life changes. I also just wanted things to be smooth. Please, that's what I was praying for, was it to be smooth. I didn't want a life of a roller coaster train ride, but Al-Anon taught me to lean in and enjoy that ride, to be grateful for that ride and to lean in. That trying to make it smooth was my way of being in everybody's business and doing things for them to make me feel differently. And I do that occasionally today, not always. And I do it when I'm more connected to my higher power than when I'm not. So those days that I do my work, I do my reading, I do my meditation. I have a 22-minute drive to work, 22 minutes. I know exactly how long it takes. So I am not totally late. 22 minutes. I can turn the radio off and I can drive and meditate. Now, I know those of you who have been in those lovely brownouts know too that I can get that way and not be paying attention to where I am. So I have to be very careful about that. But I can sit and I can just meditate. I can put a tape in, CD, excuse me, that dates me, a CD in, or turn on my phone and listen to just a little bit of something to help me begin my day. I can, any point in my day, pull out a piece of Al-Anon literature, a piece of recovery literature, and read it to start my day over again. And I know that it's going to be all right. And that is the most important piece. That when I have a bad day, when something's not going right, I can make a phone call or I can read something. And when I make that phone call, it's always about starting over. It's always about a deep breath, someone reminding me that it's all going to be all right. And to be grateful. Because when I'm in gratitude, my world is sunny and my world is bright. When I'm judging you, it's because I don't feel right inside me. And I can do that in a heartbeat because that's how I lived my life for so long. I judged you so I would feel better. And if I thought the outside looked good, then the inside must be as good. And that is not a truth in my world. And it may not be a truth even today at certain points of the day. But that's okay. That's my journey. That's my train ride. And that's my place and where, once again, I can connect with a higher power to feel that love and to show someone else that love. My husband and I have a saying that that I get tired of being nice. He didn't have that saying. I have that saying. Because I'll come home from something and it expends a lot of energy. And for so long in my life, I did those things where I was always up and I was always planning and I was busy. You see, when I first came in a meeting, I had an organizer with me. And my sponsor said, "You will not bring that to a meeting." Because you see, I had planned everything out. I still do that today. It's just in my phone. It's so exciting. And so I would plan all of those things out. And she would say to me, "You cannot do that. Just let them unfold." That was foreign to me. But that was my first lesson in acceptance, in that, you know, it's going to be all right. Don't plan somebody else's outcome. So I am not going to plan your time here for you, but if you need help, let me know. And the app works really nice, by the way. But please enjoy your time. Thank you all for listening. I so enjoy Atlanta, except honestly for the humidity and my little heat flashes that I have for me. But thank you, and I love all of you very dearly, and thank you for my serenity and my gratitude and my acceptance.